Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, recorded over the internet, we talk to Jeff Nicholson, author of The Lost Art of Walking, which is published in the United Kingdom in September 2010. When did you start writing it, and when did you conceive the idea of writing this book?
I've always been a walker, and I've never really thought about why I was a walker, or you know, or why some people weren't walkers. You know, I was born in Sheffield, and Sheffield's adjacent to the Peak District, which is supposedly prime walking country. So that was kind of what you did on a Sunday afternoon. You know, you went out there and had a walk of various degrees of arduousness, depending on how enthusiastic your dad was feeling that way. I'd always wanted to live in London. London was, you know, a big ambition I had, and as soon as I can, after university, I got away from home and went and lived in London. In part, it's that the tube is such a terrible way of seeing the city. You know, you're in the tunnel, and then you suddenly pop up somewhere, and you don't know where you are. And it does seem that walking was the best possible way of exploring London. And, I was probably, when I was young, I was 21 or so, and I wasn't really very aware of the history of London pedestrianism, but it was a thing that I did quite naturally. And then eventually I wrote a novel called Bleeding London, in which one of the characters takes on this mad project to walk down every street in London. And to a large extent, he was covering some of the territory that I'd covered. But that there were days when I would, as it were, pretend to be my character, and I'd go out and do some walking that would filter back into the book. It was always in the back of my mind that there was a non-fiction book about walking that I wanted to write. And then Rebecca Solnit came on the scene with her book, what's it called, Wanderlust, The History of Walking. And I thought, oh my God, she's got there first, or she's kind of made the territory her own. And I read the book with a certain terror. But then actually having read it, she and I are so very, very different in our approach and in what we, and how we walk and what our styles of writing and thinking. Her path and my path, although they intersect, because inevitably they do. I'm not competition for her. She's not competition for me. In that period, thinking about writing this book and actually starting to write it, of course, this big London Ian Sinclair psychogeography thing sort of came to fruition. And, there was one idiotic review I got that accused me of jumping on the Ian Sinclair bandwagon. And the idea that there's some kind of psychogeography gravy train that we're also trying to leap on to make our fortune just seems, absurd. But I love Ian Sinclair's writing. In a sense, he's the gold standard. He's the one that unless you're a fool, you try not to compete with him. You know, you try to find your own way and make it all your own. I mean, I do read some wannabe Ian Sinclairs, and I think that's a terribly bad route for anybody to take, because, he's not inimitable in the sense that I found a lot of people actually do write a bit like Ian Sinclair, but he's made the territory so much his own that, you don't want to go there.
How long did it take you to write the book? And how much of the book had you already sort of written over the, since you were 20, in your 20s and walking every street of London?
I had carried around these ideas in my head, thinking, well, yes, there'd be a chapter about this and there'd be a chapter about that. I've always been fascinated by what we call street photographers, people who just wander the streets taking photographs of the urban landscape and the people in it. I guess I could see how all this kind of tied together, and I'd always enjoyed artists like Richard Long. I thought he was great. All this stuff was in my head, and I could see that there were connections between it. But it really wasn't until, I guess if you're a professional writer, you do go around with these ideas in your head. So, there's a book to be written about that. There's a book to be written about this. And that certain moment comes when you think, yeah, now I can see how to write it. This is the way I'm going to write it. So it wasn't until I'd kind of made the decision that I was going to write the book that it all kind of came together. I'd written very occasionally about walking for magazines and so forth, but it was pretty much a new project. And then once I'd started, of course, the real problem was not what to put in, but rather what to leave out. I was very keen that the book shouldn't be a kind of shots miscellany of amazing facts about walking, kind of like the anecdotal historical side.
You've certainly captured the story of a few eccentrics.
It was a book that could have gone an enormous number of ways. I kind of didn't really want it to be a memoir, my life in walking. At the same time, to leave myself out of it completely, that didn't seem to quite work either, because then it would have become just a history of walking, and that's been done in Joseph Amato does. You know, I wanted to give of myself, but I didn't want to be, another damn memoir about my life and times and pedestrianism.
In the book, you mention a couple of times this idea of walking away and how important walking away was. Is that something I've interpreted or read between the lines, is there something there?
It's an interesting idea, and as far as I'm aware, no one else has picked up on it. The famous occasion in the book where I walk away from something is that I go to a psychogeography festival in New York, in Brooklyn, and I found it a bit of a strain. It seemed to be either silly or pretentious or both. And although I didn't really blame it, I kind of blamed myself that I kind of wasn't into it. And I thought, I don't need to be here. Nothing bad would happen if I just walked out the door and kept going, which is what I did. And that kind of feeling of liberation, of sort of turning your back on something that you don't want to be involved with, is very kind of liberating. And it's obviously a metaphor to be walking away and turning your back, but in this case it was fairly literal. If you're in a bad relationship, or if you're in a bad job, or some kind of bad situation, there's an amount of respect to be had for hanging in there and pushing it out and working it out. But that moment comes when you kind of just shrug your shoulders and you say, take this job and shove it, and you just walk out the door. That's a very specialized kind of walking, and and once in a while, extremely enjoyable. I mean, you don't want to walk away from every problem every time, but that moment when something becomes intolerable and you say, I just put one foot in front of the other and that problem will be behind me, that's kind of, I'd say, it's a liberating thing.
You say in the book that you're a constant walker. Do you use walking as a mechanism to generate ideas, or do you use walking as a way to go out and resolve issues or overcome issues?
It's a bit of both. I mean, like at the moment, I'm reworking a novel. I mean, I think there's a big question of, what writing looks like, what work looks like when you're a writer. I tend to believe that it really is a big help to just sit there at the desk and write it. I mean, I do think that, writing is about writing, but just once in a while it's not. Occasionally I'll have a problem to resolve, like two characters are going to, I know they're going to meet up in a room together, but I don't know what they're going to say to each other. And, I mean, I'm one of those guys who does talk to himself a bit. So, I'll go for a 45-minute, an hour walk, and I'll kind of, have these characters kind of talking to each other in my head. And I dare say if you were to watch me, I would be kind of muttering to myself. I do it for the pleasure of walking, but it's also part of the process of writing that there's something about the pace of walking that it gives you just enough time to be able to think and the blood starts to flow. I think that a bit of blood flowing around the brain is probably good for creativity and for having ideas.
Have you set out on a walk and sort of kept a journal of that walk? Is that something you've ever done?
In the literal sense, no. I've thought about it from time to time, and of course in these days I've been contemplating writing a blog. I live here in Hollywood, which is an odd place to live, and I'm really just half a mile away from Hollywood Boulevard and about a mile from Sunset Boulevard. You see some extraordinary things down there. I kind of come home and I tell my wife, you'll never guess what I saw today, kind of thing. And from time to time I have thought about keeping a journal, Jeff Nicholson, the Hollywood Pedestrian. I've never kept a journal, beyond the age of 12 or 13. It all stays in my head, and one day it kind of comes out. But doing it on a day-by-day basis, no, that's not something I do. Though I say I think about it from time to time.
The walking that you do, it's fairly spontaneous, or do you plan to go for a walk at some point?
I've got it. I mean, one of the issues, of course, is that if you've got some kind of reputation as a writer and walker, or someone who writes about walking, there is a certain urge that says, if I'm a walker, I really better do some walking. I mean, basically, that I try to walk pretty much every day, but there are days when it sort of feels like punishment if I'm involved in something else. But you know, I've got it in my head that I should do 2 miles a day for kind of health reasons and one thing and another, you know, and to drive away the depression and the blues. And I do that most days, you know, probably just in the neighborhood. And then, you know, on the weekend, it's not regimented. It's not absolute, you know, there's no schedule, but the weekends will be the times when I'll do, you know, long walks. But they don't have to be enormously long walks, but sometimes they can be. I mean, you know, I'm very keen not to be competitive about this. You know, I mean, I know that, you know, someone like Will Self, you know, after he's done 25 miles, he's just getting his second wind. I don't want to compete with that.
No, earlier on you were talking about psychogeography, and of course he actually wrote a book entitled Psychogeography.
Indeed, yeah.
And he's quite a character for, you know, I think the last one was right, walking to the airport, wasn't it?
Well, that's fabulous. I mean, that's such a fabulous idea that you kind of wish you'd had it, but then again, you're sort of almost glad you didn't, because you might feel you had to do it, because he walked to the airport in London and then walked from the airport in Manhattan from JFK to his hotel in Manhattan. That, as I say, you know, I'm not a very competitive walker, and I certainly wouldn't want to have to try and compete with that.
Do you think there's another book about walking that you would want to write, or do you think that you've written enough about walking?
There's an English edition of the book going to be coming out in the autumn. Partly my publisher there said, "Ooh, we need a bit more English stuff." I was over in England in August and doing, you know, some very specific walks there, walks that I'd always thought about doing and had never done. It's probably got maybe 20% new material about walking in London, walking at the seaside, a bit more about walking in the Peak District, and walking with my dad again, because that's mentioned in the original version. But, you know, I kept thinking of things to say and bits that could be added. I can't imagine doing the last art of walking, volume 2. But of course, you know, I'm constantly seeing these, you know, odd little things that, you know, I wish were in the book. I mean, Hamish Fulton is mentioned in the book, but that project that you were involved with was in Margate.
That's right. It was a walk around the marine bathing pool in Margate.
Yeah, I mean, that's just fabulous. I mean, I, when I saw that, I was kind of thinking, is there some way I can kind of shoehorn that into the...
Of the people that you researched and found out about, and we just mentioned that some of them were fairly eccentric, is there anyone that you felt that you would have liked to have had as a walking companion and perhaps gone for a walk with?
The ones that would be fascinating to walk with were so kind of eccentric and so kind of deranged that they probably... you know, hammer you into the ground before you got down the end of the street. I mean, one of the characters that I just absolutely adored was a guy called Sebastian Snow, an extraordinary old Etonian. He broke a leg when he was at Eton, so they decided he'd never really be able to walk properly. So he managed to avoid national service, and I don't know whether it was compensation or whatever, he decided he'd become one of the world's greatest walkers. And it was his plan to walk all the way from Tierra del Fuego up to Alaska. And in fact, he failed. He only got about, you know, he only got halfway. He got as far as Panama. And then, he shrugged his shoulders and walked away from the project. He just had enough. But when you read the book, it's not a book about failure. But it's about him. You know, it's not only that he's an eccentric walker, he's also a very good eccentric writer. You know, there's a great deal of comedy, I mean, most of it intentional, I think, in his prose style. No one really wants to read about someone's walk that was just, you know, total bliss and total ease. So, you know, he's constantly having problems, you know, he's being bitten by a vampire bat, you know, his boots don't fit in, you know, his contact lenses get stuck in his eyes. One of his phrases that if I can remember it correctly. And he talks about this business, which I've often experienced on a very long walk, that when you start out, you're kind of, you know, you're very observant and you're thoughtful and you're looking at things and you're thinking of things and maybe you're thinking about how you'll describe them. But in the end, a certain point comes where you don't do much thinking and you don't do much observing. And you're just walking, putting one foot in front of the other, and you know it's kind of a Zen thing, I guess, that you're you know, you're in the moment and you're in the process. He says that he's like a cart horse, putting one foot in front of the other, munching on nothingness. It's not about going anywhere. It's not about where you've been. It's not about how many miles you're going to cover. It's just about being into the very process of walking.
So you've given us an idea of a walking companion. What about of the books you read and or the blogs that you read? Which were those which you'd recommend?
There's a terrific book by an author called Philip Lopate called Waterfront, A Walk Around Manhattan. It does it over quite a long period of time, and it's partly historical. You know, he's into the history and the building of the parks and the freeways and so forth. But he's also very philosophical about what it is to be a walker, what walking means. He says a very interesting thing in the end about, although he goes around having these thoughts, he's not foolish enough as to think that they're all brilliantly original, that, you know, everybody at some point has thought the same things about walking. And I found that, you know, he's my man. Very much everything he says I would agree with. A lot of the things that he says I've tried to say in different ways. There's a certain wit about it. He's obviously quite a vigorous walker, but he goes walking with some group, the Upper East Side, and they regard him as this old guy, and, you know, they streak ahead and he's left behind walking very slowly, and he feels like an old guy and he feels like he's not quite adequate as a walker. So I guess there's some kind of comedy and irony in that as well, which is kind of what I enjoy. What about Dorothy Wordsworth, the Grasmere Journal? I mean, she goes walking mostly with William and occasionally with Coleridge. But they love walking so much that, sometimes the diary entries are as, you know, so they list actual walk. But then some days she doesn't walk, and this is obviously a terrible thing. And she writes in the diary, did not walk today, and that not walking is a rarity and is worth commenting on.
What sort of walking routes or maybe walks that you haven't yet undertaken but would like to undertake? What sort of ones have you still got stored up and hoping and looking forward to doing?
Walking the length of the Thames and going from one side to the other each time you come to a bridge. And I think I've walked across most of the bridges at some time or other. But the idea of doing it as one continuous sort of a zigzag or a sort of serpentine walk. But that's something I will do one of these days. And the other one I've always, this one wouldn't be so very hard, but the Edgware Road. When I was writing about London, I tried to talk to people about their favourite walks, but I also wanted to talk to them about the walks that they hated. And one that they really hated was Oxford Street. But I think about the Edgware Road, this strange, featureless, ugly, traffic-strewn thoroughfare. And I used to live just off it in Maida Vale, and I'm sure. And it's one of these arduous, perverse kind of walks. And like anybody else, I enjoy walking in the park, I enjoy walking at the seaside, but occasionally just walking somewhere where you feel other people don't walk or where nobody wants to walk. I rather enjoy that.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Jeff Nicholson, author of The Lost Art of Walking. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Art of Art Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZtronic.